Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulist Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And with us today, we have John Abate, who is an independent franchise owner-operator of McDonald's restaurants throughout the Central Valley of California. He's also co-founder of Possibility Productions, a nonprofit apostolate in support of the new evangelization. Today, we'll be talking about his recent released first book, Invest Yourself, Daring to be Catholic in Today's Business World. Welcome to the show, John.
Great to be here. Thanks, Pete.
Excellent. So I guess to get started, let's start off with a simple question. What drove you to write Invest Yourself?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about Invest Yourself and the topic within Invest Yourself for a number of years, probably, you know, over a decade or more. And, you know, when I was going through working on my master's in theology, I had an opportunity to do a lot of writing as part of the program. And over the course of that time, you know, I got to really think about some deeper issues about business and faith and how they interact together in a positive way, you know, within the right framework of our Catholic faith. And then, I traveled around the country doing a lot of speaking. I was doing a lot of speaking not only on business topics like entrepreneurship or marketing or brand, but I started speaking about the integration of faith and business. And I started to get real personal about my own struggles and a little bit about my own life and how my Catholic faith has been interwoven throughout my business career and my marriage, et cetera. And I found that people really resonated with the message. They could relate at a deeper level. And the more I shared and was open about my personal struggles, I think the more powerful the talk and the interaction became between myself and the folks I was speaking with. And so I started to be compelled to put this stuff into a book format and give that an opportunity to go, because obviously it's impossible to cross the country, especially in my line of work, and give the message of the Catholic faith and the integration of Catholic faith and business. So I thought, what a great way to do it with a book.
For sure. And in the beginning of that book, you talk about standing on the shoulders of giants, and that's absolutely true. We don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel all the time. We should study those who did this before us. So who are some of those giants that you look towards for guidance?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, there's so many, and I think that the Catholic Church sometimes is discounted because of the breadth and depth that we have in this faith, and the folks even within the Catholic faith don't understand the power of the giants that we continue to stand on over time. And again, going back to reading, you know, the early fathers of the church, you know, St. Augustine and Ambrose and people like that, or reading about the life of St. Benedict, the radical life of the saints. You know, those are the people that inspire me each and every day. And then you got the folks that are in our modern era, C.S. Lewis or G.K. Chesterton, or, you know, Robert Barron is a huge fan of mine. I stand on the shoulders of these giants that continue to have the intellectual power to compel our faith to be relevant as today as it was 2,000 years ago. And then, of course, my father is a huge part of that.
Gotcha. So in the first chapter of this book, you're really speaking my language, and that's about how books can change lives. And a staggering statistic you brought up that I've seen before was that less than 1% of Catholics will read a single Catholic book this year, or any year for that matter.
Right.
How do we tackle that? And how do we go about tackling that? Because people are really missing out on a treasure trove of information.
I know. It's really a shame. It's a hard one I struggle with because I'm such a reader. I'm such a fanatic when it comes to books. So it's hard for me to relate to people in my own family who, you know, won't even take the time to read. And they're smart folks, and they're very intellectual, and they're inquisitive, but they don't like to take the time to read. And I think audiobooks are a great way to do that. Unfortunately, my book isn't in audio format. But somehow, and I do, when I speak, I really try to encourage folks to take the time to read, even if it's 10 or 15 or 20 minutes a day, or do it while you're exercising or something. And so I don't know what the answer is, but I know that our great faith is built not only on faith, but on intellect and knowledge. And it's our job to continue to try to gain that intellectual knowledge that supports the faith that we have. And so the more we talk about it, the more we encourage folks to just take a book at a time and work through it, I think the more powerful it'll be. One more thing on that is that, you know, I wrote this book and edited it down quite significantly because I want it to be an easy read at some level. You know, it's not 500 pages. And I think sometimes we get ourselves overwhelmed by reading books that are just too long. And, we're busy people with not a lot of time to dedicate to that aspect of our faith.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're an entrepreneur and you have an interest in economics, which is kind of the backbone of this book. What fueled your interest in economics?
Yeah, you know, I had a teacher in high school. I was a senior in high school, and I had this teacher who inspired me to become more interested in economics and political science, matter of fact. And this was it's kind of funny how things happen on a whim. You know, I had this particular teacher, and he was just so interesting, and I started to look at the world so much differently once I started to learn the basic concepts of supply and demand, macroeconomics, and I started to understand why things happen, and it started to make so much intellectual sense. So when I went to college, I thought, why not? I'll try this out. And I liked economics because it was difficult, and there was a lot of people who struggled with it, and I found it really interesting and intriguing, not only on a macro level, but even on a micro level, and from a social economic level, economics seems to play a really interesting role in our world.
Mm-hmm. You know, another part of the book that's kind of a backbone to the book, or serves as a backdrop, is the concept of American capitalism, and how can American capitalism and Catholicism coexist in the same arena?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is understanding, you know, the Catholic Church's position on capitalism. And I think I try to do that in the book, is try to help people understand that the Catholic Church is not anti-capitalism. Pope Francis is not anti-capitalism. the Catholic Church in all their wisdom knows the interaction between capitalism and economic prosperity and goods and services that are now available for all people. So when we lift up a culture, when we lift up an economic culture, we're looking at everybody at the same time. You know, if we're working within the parameters of what is outlined in our Catholic faith, you know. And so often, I think people get kind of stuck on this kind of socialist, kind of social justice model that sometimes is misconstrued. You know, when the Catholic Church, 500 years ago was looking at economics, they were really looking at distribution of wealth because that was kind of what they understood. But today we understand the impact of capitalism and market efficiencies on their greater good for society. And all the popes in the last, the 20th century had embraced this beautiful concept of entrepreneurs or hardworking people, lifting the entire umbrella of society up at the same time. And the most giving folks are the folks who have done really well and prospered. And that's statistically proven. And, you know, I talk about that in the book. The United States has had the greatest prosperity in the world over the last 50 years, but we've also given the most to the world over the last 50 years. I mean, that doesn't happen unless you're prosperous and you have extra income. You know, right. Once you make enough money to pay for the goods that you need, the incremental income is now your opportunity to distribute in some way, shape, or form that lifts up other folks. And that's what's happened.
Right. And that tends to happen from people that are entrepreneurs such as yourself. When what drives you to be an entrepreneur? Because I think a lot of people have this American dream of owning their own business, but they're always afraid to separate themselves from punching the clock for the man, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that entrepreneurship is misconstrued in a way. I mean, I think there's all kinds of different levels of entrepreneurship. And now my particular personality, which is fairly type A and aggressive, and I like adventure and I like risk at some level, it allows me to constantly be seeking a new idea or a new company, a new restaurant, that type of thing. But the average folks out there are entrepreneurs. I think sometimes they just don't realize it. And I speak a lot about this with my general managers and my supervisors. You know, we all have an opportunity to be an entrepreneur in whatever job, whatever facet of life that we're involved in. It's about thinking outside of the box. It's not accepting what's happened in the past as the only tried and true way. You know, it's about bringing this spirit of entrepreneurship to every job that you do and say, gosh, I want to put my own unique spin on that because I have a unique talent or I see the world slightly different than everybody else. And so I want to take my talent, my intelligence, my entrepreneurship and change this job. And it could be the general manager at a McDonald's restaurant. It could be a supervisor. It could be an attorney. It could be whoever you are. You bring your energy and your creativity to whatever job you have, and you become an entrepreneur, and you do that job a little bit better. So I think that's really the secret of entrepreneurship. And then eventually, I think you get excited about it, you get comfortable, you get confident, and then you might maybe take a different leap of faith. And that might be a different job, or now you take an opportunity to actually try something on your own.
Excellent. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming FaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. With us today, we have John Abada, the author of Invest Yourself, Daring to be Catholic in Today's Business World. And John, in the book, you talk about the competitive nature of business. And I guess the question I have is, with our Catholic framework around us, how do we check ourselves in that arena so as we do not ignore our faith or shirk it, so to speak?
Yeah, and that's a tough one. I talk a lot about that in the book because a lot of successful people or a lot of people who are, you know, highly driven tend to get caught up in the game, get caught up in the competition, so to speak. And so we do have to check ourselves. And I think one of the great ways to do that is just living your Catholic faith according to the Magisterium of the Catholic Church. And it's taking the opportunity to make sure you don't miss Sunday Mass, and to make sure that you take the opportunity to experiment or experience the sacramental nature of the faith, whether that's the Eucharist at least once a week, going to confession, going on pilgrimages. There's things like that, and I talk about that in the book, that recenter us. They can't help but recenter us, and I think that's the beautiful thing about it, is that when we believe in the faith, but we get out of alignment, there's no better way to check ourselves and getting back into the faith and being realigned, because these beautiful principles of our Catholic faith can't help but realign you. And when you get an opportunity to stop, think deeper about your life and deeper about what you actually want out of your life and what is your goal, which is being the best version of yourself and reaching that beatific vision, then it helps you check yourself. And of course, partnership is always a wonderful thing. Anytime you can partner with a spiritual advisor, or your wife becomes your partner in this journey towards being a better faith-filled human being, you allow them to check yourself as well.
Got it. So, in the book, you discuss a pilgrimage that changed things for you, and I'm a big fan of pilgrimages and retreats. So, can you talk a bit about that pilgrimage and what exactly it did that changed your outlook?
Sure. Yeah. You know, at that point in my life, I was a practicing Catholic, but I could get myself out of alignment relatively easy. I was, in my early or mid-30s, really trying to make my mark in the business world. And I really struggled to balance this understanding of faith, family, and business. And I was certainly out of alignment, within my family. I had young children. I probably wasn't doing what I needed to do to support my wife and give her, the emotional support that she needed at that particular time. So the honest truth was that there was a lot of friction in my family life, and I was struggling there, but I was really focused on work. And, it got to a point where I could see that this was not going to end well if something didn't change. And I think that was the first time I was really a little afraid, and I thought to myself, I need to do something different here to get myself back in alignment, because the day in and day out habit of my faith wasn't working. And so I had an opportunity to go on a pilgrimage to Medjugorje. But before that, I took an opportunity, and we went on a day retreat together, and we had this opportunity to spend time with the Blessed Sacrament, say the rosary, go to Mass. But there was also a speaker there from Medjugorje, where apparitions had been happening since the early 80s. And I was compelled during her talk to want to go to Medjugorje and experience what she was talking about. And this was so odd for me, because I had never really been out of the country. I had no desire to disconnect for a week to do something like a pilgrimage. It just wasn't in my personality. But it nagged at me and nagged at me for several months. And eventually I went on this pilgrimage, and it was just a beautiful experience. For one, it disconnected me from my BlackBerry. It disconnected me from any type of cell phone. It disconnected me from email. And it allowed me to get in the classroom of silence and spend time evaluating the priorities of my life. And Medjugorje is an incredibly special place. I think it's kind of the epicenter of the spiritual world today. And I've been to, on pilgrimages all over the world, but there's something special about Medjugorje.
and a group of Catholics from all over the world coming together for a common purpose. I spent a week in prayer. I spent a week asking, you know, God that question, you know, what do you want with my life? You know, what is your desire for me? So I came back with a renewed sense of purpose and a realignment as to how I wanted to live the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And that pilgrimage with Medjugorje has never left me. It nags at me today as much as it did 15 or so years ago.
So you made this pilgrimage, you came back, renewed focus, renewed order of things in your life, but that's not easy to maintain. So what tips might you have for us on how to maintain that order of life, essentially, so that your business or your job doesn't overtake everything else?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it comes back to, Pete, you were talking about books. There was a couple of books that I read post returning from Medjugorje that had a huge impact on my life. Scott Hahn wrote a book called Ordinary Work, Extraordinary Grace, that talks about living your faith in your business that I can't say enough about. Alexander Havar wrote a book about virtuous leadership that is just fantastic. And then Matthew Kelly wrote a book called Dream Manager. So those three books really helped me start to think outside of the box. But I also started to incorporate pilgrimages and retreats as part of my faith journey. And so the next year I went to Medjugorje. And then a couple of years later, I had a chance to go to the Holy Land. And a couple of years later after that, I had a chance to go to Assisi. And in between, I went to some Eucharistic adoration retreats. And so I really decided that if I'm willing to put forth the effort in my faith, then that's the only way I'm going to truly get the results I desire and be on that path to holiness that is the proper calling of all Catholics. And so I had to put in the hard work, to be honest. You know, I talk about this a lot. You know, there's a book, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book about outliers. And in that book, he talked about 10,000 hours. And how do you get good at anything? If you're going to be world-class, you have to put in 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you think about the average Catholic who puts in about 30 minutes a week if they go to Mass, right? 30, 45 minutes in there. How can you be good at your faith if you're not dedicating the time? How can you be good at anything doing it 30, 40 an hour a week? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't be good at the guitar. You can't be good at much. So I thought to myself, if I'm willing to dedicate the time, that's the only way I'm going to get the results.
Right. You know, we touched upon this a little bit in segment one, but we look at work as this thing we do or this place we go to, but you entertain the notion of work as a virtue. Can you explain how work can be that?
Right. And it absolutely can be. And I think, you know, there's a lot of really good work that has been done on this. And Opus Dei, I think, brings this home. And Jose Maria Escriva talked a lot about this, about, you know, integration of faith and work. And when you're at work and you're doing all the little things that are going to make that job successful, it could be sweeping the floor all the way up to negotiating a big deal. If you're doing it faithfully and you're doing it from a perspective of doing God's work each and every day, then it makes your entire work life come alive. And you understand that, you know, we're priestly people. It's not just the priest on the altar who has this obligation. We're all priestly people in our own right as baptized Catholics. And so when we bring that spirit and that grace to our job and all the little things, we make it come alive and we start to think out the box. It's an interesting thing. The more you bring your faith in your work and you see the world a little differently, the opportunities to live your faith and work just spring out in a way that is truly incredible. Because it gets you out of the box of thinking like the secular world, you know, and you become open to helping other folks and really becoming a self-gift in the workplace versus simply a taker.
Good stuff. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about humility. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. We're here today with John Abbata, and we're talking about Invest Yourself, his book, Daring to be Catholic in Today's Business World. And we left last segment with a promise that we talk about humility. So that seems to be one thing that is often lacking in the business world. So how can we effectively integrate humility into our business lives?
Yeah, and I talk a lot about that in the book, because humility is one of the things that I certainly struggled with at times, and it tended to be my downfall. And so I have to really check myself on humility and understanding that I can't see the world through my own eyes. I need to see the world through other people's eyes. And I think one of the words that I think comes to mind is empathy. You know, when we start to understand the concept of empathy, but actually live it, understanding that we can put ourselves in somebody else's shoes to try to understand their perspective, it starts to allow us to see the world in a different light and allows us to have the humility to make the right choices on behalf of all people. And so I think understanding this concept of empathy and then also responsibility that goes with that has allowed me to overcome, you know, that lack of humility. But there's a lot of ways, I think. And part of it's just listening. You know, be here now. So often, you know, dynamic business folks who lack humility, they don't listen enough. You know, they have all the answers. And they never want to see the world through somebody else's eyes. And when you start to listen, truly listen and empathize, I think, you know, you're on a pathway to humility.
For sure. You also devote a chapter to hope. And how is hope important in our lives, particularly in the world we live in today?
Yeah, I truly believe hope is one of the most integral things that we can do to change our lives and our perspective. Because hope is the entryway to happiness. There's no way to have true happiness you don't understand and have hope. And as Catholics, we should be the most hopeful people because we've seen the end of the story. You know, we've been given the last chapter of the book, and it ends in victory for us. You know, now we have to go through the rest of the chapters, but at the end of the day, we know how the story ends, and so we should be nothing but hopeful because we know that at the end of this beautiful journey that we're struggling through is the beatific vision that is granted to us through Christ's life, death, and resurrection. And so we need to bring that hope to our lives and to the workplace. We need to be the first ones to get up in the morning and exude hope in our families. You know, be first to be the most hopeful person for the day. When you get into your car, really contemplate how hopeful you need to be and project that hopefulness to everybody else around you. And I know in the workplace, if I come in, I'm projecting an image and an attitude of hope. It lifts everybody else up. If I come in, all I do is complain about the world events and how negative everything is and doomsday, it brings everybody down. And the reality is that it's my job to bring hope, not only to my own family, but to bring hope to the workplace and to be a positive element. And that's just an attitude. It's an attitude and a perspective that understands the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. And to back up in that statement a little bit, you mentioned that we know the end of the story. And I think we often lose sight of that because we allow ourselves to get wrapped up in the earthly position we find ourselves in now. But at the end of the day, we know we win.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and we just don't grasp that. On a more micro level, though, you know, so often the employees that I work with come from disadvantaged backgrounds and dysfunctional families, and they don't understand the concept of hope. And so I really try to bring hope
in the workplace in a myriad of different ways, whether it's offering college scholarships and helping folks dream about something bigger for themselves than they ever thought possible. I bring in these folks into a room and I talk about them and their lives as future leaders, whether it's in the realm of McDonald's or not, and try to give them the tools to think bigger about their life than maybe they had the opportunity to while living in their household. And so hope and conveying hope can come in many different ways.
For sure. Now, I'd like to quote from your book, and you say, quote, "I've discovered that the reality of my long-term contentment is not predicated on things I can afford to buy or my accolades at work," end quote. How long did it take you to arrive at that? And was there a watershed moment, so to speak, that brought you to that conclusion?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I think we all still struggle with that, and I still struggle with it at times. So mm-hmm. I'm never free from that. So I'm always battling that understanding. Though I know it's completely true and I feel it, I still battle with it at times. I still get wrapped up in this consumerism culture or this idea that, winning is everything. But I would say, post-Medjugorje and kind of putting my family in the right place helped me understand that that's really what makes me happy. Everything else is just window dressing and really never makes me happy. And the interesting thing is we all know it. There are certain things in life that we do that allows us to be happy after the fact, right? If I get a really great workout in, I feel good, I did that workout, it resonates throughout my day. When I'm connected to my spouse or my children, that feeling resonates throughout the day. It has legacy and longevity. But, the rewards of buying something are very short-lived. We all know that. Or the rewards of an accolade are very short-lived. And then we need another one, and we need another one. We need this continuum of accolades or continuum of purchasing. Can continue to get you that feeling of happiness. And so that's just not happiness. It's really pleasure. And
right.
So that's really what it comes down to.
You lead in from that section of the book into another topic where you talk about exercising restraint. And that, we touched upon it there, but it can be really tough with the marketing machine we contend with on a daily basis. So what advice can you mm-hmm. give people to avoid that trap of consumerism?
The Catholic Church is just so brilliant, and they have this we have this concept, right, called fasting. And fasting is not just fasting always from food, but it's fasting from a myriad of things that are not allowing you or that are captivating you and not allowing you to be the best version of yourself. And so one of the ways to control yourself is to fast. Fast from social media. Just turn it off. Delete your account. Get rid of your Amazon or whatever's holding you back that you immediately gravitate to. You just get rid of it, and then you get rid of the temptation. I think that there's a funny story I tell my kids sometimes. I love scones and I love things like that. So when I'm on a long drive, I might grab a nice scone, but I really only want half of the scone. I want a cup of coffee and half a scone, but I have a heck of a time controlling myself. So I'll break off half the scone and I'll throw the rest of it in the very back of my car. So there's no way I can reach it, And so I'm content with half that scone and it allows me to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish. And so, I think that we need to exercise all kinds of ways of fasting in our lives that help us create restraint. And some of these restraints just, they have to be done in a manner that don't allow us to be the worst version of ourselves. And I think social media and television and things like that are so easy to control yourself from if you simply turn it off or delete and say, hey, a month later, maybe I'll get back on it. And chances are you probably won't, because it's not that you realize it's so great not having it.
Right. And that whole concept leads us to another question, and that is sacrifice. And sacrifice is tough. So can you speak to us a bit about the importance of sacrifice and how, at the end of the day, it can benefit us?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, related to the Catholic Church, and I talk a little bit about this in the book, and I bring in some encyclicals to kind of substantiate the concept. But, you know, sacrifice is really at the heart of our Catholic faith, and we celebrate the sacrifice of Christ, you know, every day across the world in the Mass and every week to remind us the importance of sacrifice and that, you know, this life and this happiness is not going to come with trial and tribulation, because we're on a journey that allows sacrifice to mold us into the human beings that we're meant to be. And so that we're all going to face sacrifice, and we're not going to shy away from it, but we're actually going to see the benefits of sacrifice and the journey of it all that allows us to be a better human being tomorrow than we are today. And so sacrifice comes in so many forms, does it not? Sometimes it comes in the loss of a loved one. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it comes in our own sickness, and sometimes it comes just fasting from the goods of the earth that allow us to refine ourselves and control the natural impulses of our body and allow our spiritual and our faith nature to take over. And so I talk about this understanding of sacrifice and the importance of it in relation to our growth as human beings and how important it is to learn the concept of sacrifice. And I think that also goes with humility.
For sure. With that, we're going to take one more break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way: buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land gift shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. We've been spending the day with John Abada, the author of Invest Yourself, Daring to be Catholic in Today's Business World. We've covered a lot of ground, and two-thirds of the way through the book, John, you summed it up quite simply by stating that happiness is a choice. Can you explain that concept to us a bit?
Yes. And I love that. Happiness is the choice, because it really cuts right down to it. And so there's so many books about happiness, and we could fill a stadium of books on happiness. But ultimately, you know, we've been all around the world, many of us, or we've been all around the United States in our own communities, and we see poverty, and we see wealth, and we see, you know, dysfunction, and we see people of all kinds of different ailments. But what we don't necessarily see consistently is happiness as it relates to material wealth, or happiness as it relates to looks, et cetera. And so, you know, you start to realize that happiness is truly a state of mind, and it's how I see the world and the choices I make each and every day to choose to accept who I am and how I live my life, and that there's happiness is related not to this world, but some deeper understanding and purpose of what our lives are meant to be, a self-gift within our families, within the community, of course, ultimately the beatific vision. And so happiness is simply a choice. It has no correlation above, you know, at least enough money to be to subside. It has no correlation to money or to physical attributes or to where you live. And I think that's an important understanding. And once you get that, it really frees you to be happy. It really frees you to take personal responsibility for your happiness and then do things each and every day that lead you towards your unique happiness.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting topic you cover is legacy building towards the end of the book. And this is actually something that just came up in discussion the other day that I was having with someone. And that's this American idea that of legacy being the stuff you leave behind for your kids or your grandkids, which is really most of the times things they don't want anyhow and they end up throwing away. So what is the proper legacy to leave behind, and how do we break this mindset of this legacy being stuff?
Right. Two things. One, I think we have to accept that we're not meant for comfort. We're meant for greatness. And so when you make a choice to live a legacy relative to just leaving a legacy, you're making a conscious choice to be uncomfortable, to take risks. It's really easy to leave a legacy. I'm going to just live my life, and whatever I have at the end, you know, great, that's my legacy. But when you challenge yourself to come outside of yourself, to live a legacy today is a totally different level of living and comfortability. And so I think that's one. You've got to understand that. But two, you also have to understand that the goods of this world, we don't own those goods. You know, those are goods given to us by God to use in the proper fashion, but ultimately they're His, and we're just borrowing those goods in order to utilize them in a way that lifts up creation. And so I think those two things working hand in hand give you the perspective that you need to start understanding that our life is meant for legacy, and the only way we can truly leave a substantial legacy is to start living it today. And so that's really the concept, you know, that I talk about in the book and how important it is. And I think that Pope Francis is truly challenging us to get outside of our comfort zone and understand this concept of legacy, that means taking personal responsibility today to add value to the world.
For sure. Now, you close the book with this concept that I want to discuss. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that and some other things other than the book as well. But here's the statement you made. You said, we change the world one life at a time. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. That concept is beautiful because it allows you to understand that it's not as complicated as you think. You know, legacy and changing the world isn't as complicated as you think. It's about one life. It's not about, you know, 10,000 lives. We all can't be Mother Teresa. We all can't be, you know, Bishop Robert Barron. You know, we all can't be these great figures that have changed the world in huge numbers. But we all can change one life. And if we can change one life, we can change another life. And we do that by just changing our mindset and realizing that we have the power, the ability, the talent, the intellect to make a difference in this world and evangelize. And it starts one life at a time. It's not 10,000 lives. It's not even 5 lives. If we can do it within our own homes, if we can do it within our own neighborhoods, if we can do it within our own communities, then we can start to change the world. We don't have to be St. Paul.
For sure. Now, I wanted to give you some time to talk about something in addition to your book, and that is your apostolate Possibility Productions. What is that, and what do you do there?
Yeah, thank you for asking me that. Possibilities Productions is an apostolate that myself and one of my best friends, Brian Kravick, started a couple of years ago, and it's really the offshoot of work we've been doing for the last 15-plus years. Specifically Brian. And so we started to bring in dynamic speakers into our parish, and we started to bring in musicians and all kinds of different folks, and doing some retreats in our parish area over the last 15 years to try to evangelize the parish and to really light that parish on fire. We've had some just wonderful musicians and speakers over the years, and we developed a certain skill set to understanding how that world works. And then we thought, wow, what a great idea if we could come together and create an apostolate that could branch out beyond just our own little parish. And we formed Possibilities Productions, and now we're doing women's retreats, men's retreats in different parishes, and we're also doing
bringing in great speakers like Matt Maher and others to help evangelize the culture. Because it comes back to that concept we talked about earlier in the podcast, is that to really grasp the Catholic faith and to really have a meaningful impact on your life, you have to get outside of your four walls of your parish and really experience the true breadth and spirit and the grace of our faith in a myriad of different ways, whether it's through retreats, pilgrimages, a great Christian or Catholic musician, et cetera, a great speaker that motivates you. Because we're all reached in different ways. You know, your parish priest might be wonderful, but he just might not connect with you. So get outside of those four walls and find somebody else who truly connects with you. And that's the opportunity that Possibilities Productions and other apostolates are trying to accomplish.
That's awesome stuff. So in closing, where can people find your book, Invest Yourself, Daring to be Catholic in Today's Business World?
Yeah, my book is available on Amazon. It's on iBooks, and it's also on Dynamic Catholic. And so the best opportunity to buy the book or buy multiple copies of the book for a relatively inexpensive price is to go to Dynamic Catholic. And on the Dynamic Catholic website, you'll find my book. You'll find my profile. If you would like me to speak, there's also an opportunity to make a request for speaking. I don't do a ton of it just because I have so many other things in my life, but I truly do enjoy getting out to conferences or parishes around the country and speaking about the integration of faith and business.
Awesome. Well, John, that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
No, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. I hope you take the time to read a great Catholic book, whether it's